Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know how everything seems like a good idea after you've had a few? Yeah, that's this show.
Riding in my car. And I'm listening to the radio.
It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names that mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I drink and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, thanks.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just gotta call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done on other radio shows around the country?
No.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, let's get it going. It is indeed Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game, and the Odyssey app. Mikhail and Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike here on Martin Luther King Day. A short show today as we're with you till 5:30 this evening. We'll lead you right into the Hawks and the Milwaukee Bucks. A little NBA basketball here on this January the 17th. What up, Tommy?
Man, sometimes you get lucky, Nick, on fill-in days. Today's a great fill-in day for sports. Are you kidding me? What a weekend in sports.
Yeah, I mean, we had so much to get to, from the NFL to the parade to some basketball, all sorts of good stuff. And we got to cram it all in here because we're not with you for the typical five today. Only 3.5 hours. Eric Slaughter in for Bo Morgan and Chris Thomas today. We have a lot of news to get to with the Dogs, with the transfer portal, all of that. But Tommy, it was just a week ago at this very moment today that we were getting ready for the national championship, right? We're getting ready for the rematch, and then boom, the rest is history. The Dogs win the national championship. 2 days ago, an unbelievable parade on Saturday celebrating a national championship. I think you were on in the morning. I was on in the afternoon. Carl, Mike, and Chuckery live from Athens, Georgia. And I was only observing it from just what I'm seeing on Twitter with videos and pictures. But, dude, I mean, how awesome was that to see for a fan base that waited over four decades to get back on top?
It's amazing what Atlanta now has gone through in virtually a calendar year. Like, the Dogs are obviously the cream of the crop for the majority of fans in Atlanta. Like, the Braves were obviously right there, you know, 1A, 1B. But we had a Hawks Eastern Conference Finals run last year. Then we have the Braves winning the darn World Series. And now, like I just said, the cream of the crop, the cherry on top, the Dogs getting it done. I mean, we're not going to get into the game that much more about, you know, where we go from here. You mentioned the transfer portal, but that was such an impressive win by Georgia to not only win a national championship game, but to do it against Alabama. It feels so much bigger to actually beat Saban and beat a very good Saban football team and actually be able to not squeak out a win, but dominate and win almost every quarter in that game. It's just, for every Dog fan that I know since moving to Atlanta, and obviously most people I know are either Dog fan or Auburn fans, it was so exciting and so fun to see them get excited. I know most of our listeners were in the same boat.
No doubt about it. You finally get over that hurdle, and then you celebrate it. You celebrate it Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and then you celebrate again on a Saturday. And that's exactly what big number 99 Jordan Davis did, because at the parade on Saturday, Mr. Davis said, "We are legends forever."
It's everything. Kid from Charlotte, North Carolina, you know, not that big of a recruit, feeling a little nervous coming in. Dog Nation embraced me with open arms. And for that, I'm forever thankful, forever grateful. And this is something that nobody can take away from us. We forever legendary. So to all Dog Nation, we love you. Go Braves and go Dogs.
All right, that was Jordan Davis celebrating the national championship on Saturday. But Tommy, you know, things happen quickly. You celebrate for a few days, and then it's back to business. You get back to the grind. If you're not following Mike Griffith on Dog Nation on Twitter, you should, because he's got all sorts of information today. Today is the day where you must declare, if you're a Georgia Bulldog or any college athlete, if you're going to enter the NFL draft. And if you decide to, you then have 72 hours to pull your name back out.
Right.
But the Dog's very active. Nolan Smith's going to be coming back. He announced that today. But the big news, about 55 minutes ago, JT Daniels expected to enter the transfer portal. Tommy, it looks like his days in Athens are all but done.
Yeah, you knew someone from this quarterback group was going to have to go. It was not going to be Stetson Bennett. And I think this is good for JT. JT can be a championship caliber quarterback in college football. Now, depending on where he goes, right? Because there are only sort of programs that can actually win a national championship year in and year out. And he's leaving one of them here in Georgia. But this is good for him. I mean, I feel like most Georgia fans were all on the JT hype train last year. And then slowly but surely, we watched Stetson Bennett go from a guy who throws too many picks and is too indecisive and has a little bit of mobility to, okay, wait a second, we need to keep this guy as the starting quarterback. It was fun to watch Dog fans slowly buy into that. I was one that was all in on JT Daniels. I said on my radio show on Saturday mornings that they need to put JT in. They need to be able to score more points. He has a better chance of throwing the football down the field, blah, blah, blah. And myself and many others were wrong about that. So if I'm JT, I have a great resume. I have actual games in the SEC pretty recently that I can go back on. And there should be a ton of college football programs out there that immediately line up for his services. I'm excited to see where he goes.
Yeah, and now the next domino to drop will be 25-year-old-to-be Stetson Bennett. What is his decision? And I would say this, like, you know, I don't think anybody can criticize what decision Stetson Bennett makes, because he just ended a 40-plus year drought. So, but let's think about this, right? Because now the quarterback room is going to clear up. JT Daniels is going to leave. Stetson Bennett, he's next in line to make a decision. You've got Brock Vandegrift. You've got Gunnar Stockton. Maybe Caleb Williams via the portal. But if I'm Stetson Bennett, I'm thinking about this. There's like four options, but only one of them I truly could see making sense. Like, number one, he's just not going to retire. He's just going to not going to just stop playing college football and go out on top like he's the Saturday version of John Elway. I don't see that happening. I don't see him entering the transfer portal because JT Daniels is already doing that. And I don't see him getting a good enough grade or an evaluation or a prospect status to go to the draft. So to me, the only option for Stetson is to come back and try to go back to back, right?
Well, and Stetson, too, I mean, you mentioned the draft there. That would be the worst thing he could possibly do. So all too often, and it's not just quarterbacks, but good college players who have a lot of success in college football get a little too, NFL heavy. And they're like, you know what? I can do it. Let's go. I can be a fourth round draft pick and I'll work my way up. No. Ben is obviously not at that point. But with another year and another deep run in the college football playoff, maybe he could be. Like, I mean, there's no reason why his skill level couldn't progress enough for him to eventually become a, you know, top four round pick at quarterback in the NFL draft. And so I think the right decision is exactly what you said. You stay for one more year. You try to not only win it again, because obviously Georgia will be right up there in the AP poll and a lot of, you know, sports talk people's minds as being one of the best teams in college football. But you also have another year to develop your skills. That way, hey, maybe he pops even more, which is crazy to think about a championship caliber, championship winning quarterback needing to go even further. But he takes that next step, and then NFL scouts come calling next year, and he waltzes right into either a backup role, which is not a bad spot to be in the National Football League, or competing for a starting position.
And, oh, by the way, he will be playing with house money, because he won a national championship. So he could come back and be mediocre. He could come back and go 10-3. I don't think anybody would give a rip, because he did what nobody thought was possible.
Yep.
All right, guys. Dukes of Bell, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Nick Hale, Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike today. Yesterday and all weekend, NFL playoffs, super wild card weekend. But how about the middle game yesterday in that triple header? I called it the former Falcon Bowl between Kyle Shanahan and Dan Quinn. And I don't know, Thomas, like what you made of that game yesterday and all the drama. But like, I don't know if I watched a really good, exciting game or a dramatic, drama-filled, horribly coached game by both guys, because we'll get to McCarthy in a moment with what he did, you know, with 18 seconds left or whatever that was with Dak Prescott. But I'm sitting there yesterday, Kyle Shanahan, and I know you have some attachment to the 49ers. I mean, he lost Bosa. He lost Fred Warner.
Yeah.
and fourth and one, and he was getting ready to punt the ball from midfield and give it back to the Cowboys. I'm like, Kyle Shanahan, you spineless turd, just go for it.
It was an incredible game overall, and I like you said there at the beginning, was this a great football game or just a high-drama, poorly coached game? My brain was immediately going to what you said was the Falcon Bowl, right? Dan Quinn versus Kyle Shanahan, but more specifically, those two potential head coaching candidates on the Cowboys side of the football field. All we've heard for the past week and a half is Kellen Moore is a top job as the OC in Dallas. He's going to get some looks from people. I mean, Dan Quinn to Denver is almost written in pen, it feels like. People are saying that Quinn's going to be the next Bronco head coach, which to me makes no sense. And then you watch that game. I don't know how, and again, you can't be a prisoner of the moment because it is just one game. You got to go back on everything. But you watched in that first half, especially Dallas's defense, led by Dan Quinn, get completely shredded. I mean, literally, they were getting gashed time and time and time again by Jimmy Garoppolo. And then, likewise, you watch the Cowboy offense, which is the best offense statistically in the National Football League. They had no point. Is it 7 points through the majority of the game? And then they eventually picked things up. Like, the coordinators in that game were extremely disappointing and extremely frustrating. Let me just say this, though, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, Nick. We always, you know, talk about the Falcons as a whole and how the Falcons have been a bad franchise for the past couple of seasons, the Falcons that can't get over the hump. Can you imagine being a Dallas Cowboy fan this morning?
That is a gutless organization, by the way.
I mean, yeah, literally, like, they have a ton of talent. If you were to take the Cowboy talent and put it up against the Falcon talent, for instance, it's like 5-1 better. I mean, it's leagues better. The expectation was Super Bowl, and not only did they lay a dud, I mean, they were terrible yesterday. They lose in dramatic, bad coaching fashion, yep, and are bounced yet again in the playoffs. It could be a lot worse for a lot of organizations. It'd be rough to be a Cowboy fan today.
I mean, look, if I'm Jerry Jones today, I would fire Mike McCarthy.
I would too.
Elevate Kellen Moore to head coach. By the way, Mike McCarthy, drastically overrated, won a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, not a great coach. Dak Prescott, overpaid, overcompensated. I get it. Dak, you know what? When he was out, you saw how bad the Cowboys are. There's no doubt about it. Dak's a good quarterback. But what has Dak done in the month of January? And then Dan Quinn, you know what? If Denver wants to hire DQ, be my guest. You got a lot of weapons. You got a good defense. But you got no quarterback in Denver. Dan Quinn ain't going to do anything in Denver. He's not going to get them to a Super Bowl. Would you agree?
And why would you, if you were, let's say, Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, who's the Denver, you know, hopeful, right? Repeat the Peyton Manning situation. Why would you go to what continues to be a defensive-minded organization?
Right.
Like, you got to build around this stuff. We're going to get into that. I think that conversation, especially later on in this show, because the head coaching carousel, 9 openings now, can be even more if Dallas fires Mike McCarthy. We'll break that down a little bit later on. Coming up in about 6 minutes, we'll get into the headlines. The Hawks have got to do something tonight. Like, they're probably not going to win. What happens if they lose and it looks bad? We're going to break that down coming up next year. Thomas Mott, Nick Hale, in for Carl and Mike. Sports Radio 92 in the Game, streaming live in your pocket on the Odyssey app.
Strap in, youngins.
Hitting the headlines with Dukes and Bell.
All right, guys, good to have you in here on this Monday. Nick Hale, Thomas Mott, in for Carl and Mike today as we hit some headlines. And it's brought to you by ATL Live Well. Low testosterone doesn't have to keep you down. They can help. Call ATL Live Well today. Don't just live, live well. Tommy Mott, I would not say that the Hawks are living well right now. The Bucks, you know, the Bucks are on the struggle bus as well, but they still entered tonight 27-18 as we get an Eastern Conference Finals rematch. And Tom, I don't know how this is possible. In fact, I would say it's impossible, except for the fact we're actually living it. So it is possible. This team has not won a home game since November the 22nd.
We are getting down to the point where in the Hawks season, where it's going to be make or break very, very quickly, or they might not only like miss the playoffs, but not even be anything higher than an 8 or a 7 seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, we're not there yet. You still get to the All-Star break. But, like, we're getting to that point, Nick, where if they're not going to turn this thing around, they're not even going to make the playoffs. This is an Eastern Conference Finals team that is virtually the same, if not healthier, because now DeAndre Hunter is back, and they're playing bad basketball, man. And I don't know how it's going to get better. I don't know how they're going to win tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And look, you know, we saw the first domino drop last week. It was Cam Reddish. Will there be more? I think if you're a betting man, yes, you would want to bet yes. And those of you that are tracking, the trade deadline is Thursday, February the 10th. So we are inside of about 3 weeks, give or take a day or so, from that trade deadline. And you can guarantee that Travis is going to be shaking things up if they don't start flipping the switch right away. Let's hear from our star, Trae Young, talking about, you know what, we might just have to embrace the underdog role yet again.
I mean, I think I'm just want to just continue to keep working. I want this team to keep working, keep their heads up. And then it only takes a couple runs. I've been doubted and been the underdog my whole life. So I've been able to prove people wrong my whole life. I plan to do it here. And that's literally my mindset. I can't speak for everybody. Everybody thinks differently. But for me, I just I wanna prove people wrong again.
I don't know, Tom. Maybe this is the blueprint. We have the Hawks struggle. We all start to bang on Trae and bang on the team, say they're dead and buried and gone and forgotten about, and then they flip the switch.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically that's what happened last year, is that everyone was saying they're not going to make the playoffs, and then the All-Star break, the firing of Lloyd Pierce. You know what's getting completely washed out in all this, Nate? I'm curious what's your thoughts on this. Nate McMillan. I mean, Nate McMillan is getting a pass right now. I know there are some people out there that are like, oh, you know, Nate's, you know, partially to blame. But in reality, no one's really talking about the fact that Nate McMillan went from, like, the greatest decision the Hawks have ever made, minus getting Trae Young. It was like, oh, my gosh, they pivoted to him at the All-Star break last year, and he turned it all around, and this is going to be the coach of the future. I mean, he's the coach right now. I mean, and these are – I don't know how you feel. A lot of these Hawks losses feel like effort losses. Like, it feels like you get down to the fourth quarter, right, and for some reason the effort seems to start to fade away. And that's a player problem. Like, it's up to the players to actually play. But Nate McMillan is the leader of this train, and he's got to get a little bit more out of these guys than I think that we're getting right now. And I still believe in him. I still think he's a great coach. We can't just, you know, toss him to the side as soon as he starts to lose some basketball games. But lost in all of these losses, and there are so many of them, Nick, is the fact that no one's talking about Nate McMillan is at the head of this train.
Yeah, and you use the word great. I won't go that far. I do not think Nate McMillan is a great head coach.
That's fair. He had a great season.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think he's a good coach. You know, you look at where he is all time on the win list. He's top 20 all time in the NBA in coaching wins. You look at his win percentage, you know, he's above 500, but he's not spectacular. I think it's more of, you know, you look at Nate, you look at Travis, you look at Trae. To me, you know, it starts all the way up at the top. And I'm putting blame on all three of them right now because for some reason there's a I can't even put the right word into context. There's just something missing. Maybe they arrived too quickly and they just thought that they could flip the switch again. It doesn't work that way, Tom.
Yeah, it could be that. And I hate whenever people go down an even further list than that or a further line and they say, oh, well, you know, winning so far so much last year was a bad thing. Like, you could see that column being written somewhere. It's not a bad thing. Yep. But you do start to wonder with them being so young. We immediately rose them up to this, like, oh, well, the Hawks are a top three team in the Eastern Conference. And maybe they just bought into it a little bit too much because it's not like they're – and I think this is serious. It's not like they are – you know, mediocre right now. Like they're beating the bad teams and losing to the good teams. They're losing to everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you start going through your ESPN list of Hawks wins and losses, and like you said, since December, since that one little winning streak middle of November, it's all losses. I mean, it's like a handful of wins, and they're not even good wins. You beat Sacramento, you beat Cleveland, you beat Orlando. Like, they're beating nobody except the very bottom of the barrel NBA teams right now.
Yeah, and to wrap it up, the Hawks, all you need to know about tonight, they're 5.5-point home underdogs on their floor to Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. It is the headlines here on Dukes and Bell. Nick Hale, Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Speaking of beating up on bad teams, let's get to the NFL from yesterday and on Saturday as well. We had 5 games. We have one coming up tonight to wrap up Super Wild Card Weekend. But let's go back to that former Falcon Bowl between Kyle Shanahan and Dan Quinn, 49ers and the Cowboys. 49ers beat the Cowboys 23-17, and the Dallas Cowboys, to me, were the epitome of beating up on a bad team. They racked up wins against Philadelphia and New York and Washington, and when they stepped outside of the NFC East this year, They were a below 500 team yesterday, or for the year. Let's hear from Mike McCarthy, the Cowboy head coach, at this very moment, defending his quarterback run at the end of the game yesterday with Dak Prescott.
We call them thresholds and, you know, the field position, what yard line you're at and what you're trying to get to, too, based on, you know, defense that they're trying to, the defense that they were playing. They were in a sideline defense, so they were protecting the sidelines. And so that was the best option to, you know, to be able to get the ball. I mean, it's like anything else. Do you want to be running a Hail Mary play from the 50-yard line, or you want to be running five verticals from the 25-yard line? So that's the decision. It's the right decision. You know, it's just like anything. It's, you know, the execution between us and the officiators putting the ball obviously wasn't in tune, wasn't, you know, we shouldn't have had any problem getting the ball spotted there. Just, if that's, is that the quote you're looking for? So.
There he is. I mean, Thomas, I mean, first you had Shanahan's decision to go for that punt. And then D'Amico Ryans was letting them go down the field and get to the sidelines and get out of bounds. And then all of a sudden, Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore call that play. I'm sorry, but like Dallas, that's coaching malpractice from my vantage point.
I'll be honest. I'm not a big ESPN guy. I was watching ESPN today, and Dan Orlovsky is the best thing on that network right now. He did a great breakdown of this, and he changed my mind on the final play call because I agreed at first. I was like, what are you doing running the ball, quarterback sneak, when you have no timeouts and you need to clock it? It was the right play call. Dak has to slide 3 yards shorter, or mm-hmm. earlier, I should say, okay. and immediately pop up and do the Larry Fitzgerald, find a referee, hand him the football, and let the referee set it down. Like, it was Dak Prescott's fault that they ended up not getting one final play. I'm fine with that play call. You just have to not get 30 yards, get 25 yards, slide down, immediately stand up, look for a referee, hand him the football, because that's a 60-year-old guy. You can't just toss it to him. They might drop it. I mean, sometimes 7-year-old refs, they're really old out there these days. Hand it to him, let the ref spot it, because that's how the rules work, and they would have had 2 or 3 seconds to clock it and take a shot at the end zone. Like, Dak's got to be more aware, and I get that you're in a high-stakes situation, Nick, and it's like, oh, you know, my brain's working 1,000 miles per hour, but you've got to realize my number one job right now is to get this football in the hands of a ref. That way he can spot it and we can get up and spike the ball.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. Our NFL Blitz, we'll get deeper into all of these games coming up at 3 o'clock today. In about 10 minutes, Eric Edholm, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, covers the National Football League and the NFL Draft. He'll join us to talk about some of these games. I also had a couple of Falcons observations as I'm watching Super Wild Card Weekend. We'll get to that as well. But just a couple of quick hitters. I was surprised. I'm not surprised that the Eagles lost to the Bucs yesterday.
I'm not either.
But I am surprised that they were not competitive for a bulk of that game. I did not expect them to get floored. And I don't know that Jalen Hurts is the long-term guy.
Hey, listen, I cover Philadelphia, one of my other gigs during the week, and I'm the same way. Philly should have been able to stay in that football game. The Bucs are fantastic, and Brady's great, but they have a lot of injuries, and the defense is not that great. It's tough on Hurts because he's had some really good games the past couple of weeks. Like, I had bought into Jalen Hurts, but the Eagles have 3 first-round draft picks, and there's a guy named Russell Wilson who very clearly is not happy in Seattle. Had Hurts played well in that game, I think he's your quarterback, you know, going into 2022 and 2023. But it looked that bad, and that difference between Brady and Hurts was too extreme. Philadelphia is probably going to trade for a quarterback, and it's probably going to be Russell Wilson, barring some sort of, you know, magical clear up from Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, and then on Saturday, the Bengals beat the Raiders 26-19.
Love it.
Pretty compelling game, a good game. Feel like the Bengals are always the early Saturday game when they make the playoffs as a wild card. And then on both nights in primetime, you had 2 blowouts. The Chiefs hammered the Steelers. I think some people saw that coming. And then maybe a little bit of a surprise, not to me, but I think some people a little bit surprised that Buffalo laid the beatdown on New England by 30 points, Thomas.
These young quarterbacks, man, you mentioned the Bengals first. Joe Burrow. The Bengals offense is going to be a problem in the AFC for the next 10 years. They have 3 legit receivers. They have they should improve the offensive line. And they have a quarterback who's going to win multiple MVPs. The Bengals are legit. I think the Bengals are going to go into Tennessee next week and upset the Titans. And the same goes for Josh Allen. I mean, Josh Allen he's incredible. And there are still people out there. I was shocked to watch Twitter going into this football game. There are still people who are not sold on Josh Allen. If you're unsold on Josh Allen, who's in, like, what, year 3 as a quarterback in the National Football League?
Delete your Twitter account.
What are you doing?
If you're not sold on Josh Allen, just go to bed.
There are some fun young quarterbacks. I mean, listen, Pittsburgh last night, their defense is ready to rock. I mean, all you got to do is plug and play Ben's replacement with a legit quarterback, whether you draft the future or you go trade for somebody. Pittsburgh is going to be just fine. They just ran into what is the high-flying Chiefs offense and this guy named Patrick Mahomes, who I think I remember, Nick, some other people were doubting him earlier on this year. It's funny how that works.
Go figure. It was really kind of like the tale of two stories for the weekend. Those that have their stud quarterback and those that either don't have their guy or, you know, they're kind of on the fence like a Derek Carr.
I'm very curious to see what Eric Edholm, we're talking to him coming up here about 6 minutes, says about not only this weekend and really the Dallas Cowboys, because you know that question is coming, but next weekend as well. Who is he like in terms of the divisional round matchups? We'll jump into an NFL interview with Yahoo Sports NFL and NFL draft expert Eric Edholm coming up here in about 6 minutes. Dukes and Bell rolls on here on Sports Radio 910 The Game, also streaming live in your pocket on the Odyssey app.
To more Dukes and Bell.
This is fun
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, guys, welcome back in. Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mikhail, Tommy Mott in for the fellas today here on Martin Luther King Jr. Day as we roll till 5:30 this evening. Hawks and the Bucks. One team looking pretty decent, the other one not so much. We'll call it an Eastern Conference Finals rematch, but it feels anything but that. We get our man Deshaun Tate coming up in the 4 o'clock hour to talk some Hawks and our NFL Blitz in less than 20 minutes. But right now, let's talk a little NFL as we go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Say hello to our buddy Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports NFL writer. Eric, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well. I want to start with the Sunday night game last night because it's weird. I'm sitting here on Super Wild Card weekend and, you know, I'm watching the games, I'm betting on the games, but I'm also looking at it with like a little Falcons red and black tint and some sunglasses on thinking, okay, where are we compared to that team? And I want to start with the Chiefs because last year they needed to get their offensive line figured out. And they went out and they drafted Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. They brought in Joe Tooney in free agency. They traded for Orlando Brown. They fixed it and they protected their investment in one offseason with Patrick Mahomes. Why can't the Falcons do the same?
Yeah, I mean, they really did kind of strike gold in a lot of different ways, too. And you know, I mean, not everything they did worked out perfectly, right? I mean, they signed Kyle Long and he hasn't been able to see the field. He's been on IR and, you know, I mean, things happen, obviously. They've had to rely on Andrew Wiley here down the stretch. But you accumulate depth and you supplement it as best you can. I mean, you know, I heard an evaluator say a pretty interesting thing a couple years ago, and I never forgot it. He said, you know, we often will draft to our strengths. We'll draft to positions that we're already in pretty good shape at because, you know, maybe not first-round selections, but we'll certainly buttress it because if you lose a star player, let's say your left tackle, and you have to turn to an undrafted rookie as his replacement or some journeyman who's got three starts to his name, how big a drop-off is that? It completely changes your identity. So, you know, easier said than done, of course, right? Not everybody hits on every draft pick. You have other needs pulling you in different directions. There's only so much salary cap money you can spend and whatnot. But, yeah, I think the Chiefs are kind of a blueprint for – how you attack a position in the offseason, how you make it work under the constraints of having a well-paid quarterback, and how you get these guys developing chemistry together. So it really has worked out. I mean, outside of the Tennessee game, I think you could say that it's been a team strength that they've, you know, more often than not been very dominant up front. As for the Falcons, though, I mean, you know, for the amount of draft capital they've spent at that position, you'd expect a little more continuity, a little more strength, and just a little more stability, I guess.
Eric, obviously a lot of coordinators in yesterday's games and on Saturday as well are also interviewed for head coaching jobs. I'm very curious how you view the games this weekend in terms of people going out and getting jobs, right? Because there are a couple coordinators that look fantastic. Todd Bowles with the Bucks looked absolutely incredible. I think about Brian Daboll with the Bills, offensive coordinator there, fantastic. And then some other coordinators who are getting interviews, Jonathan Gannon, the Eagles defensive coordinator. You look at, you know, Kellen Moore, the OC for the Dallas Cowboys. Do you think a lot of these teams that need head coaches take more value in what they recently saw in this weekend's games? Or do you think that it's not really going to matter if your guy got blown out or your guy played really, really well?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there are things that should and shouldn't matter, right? And recency bias can always kind of skew our view of you know, who the best coordinators are. And sometimes the best coordinators don't make the best head coaches. We've learned that lesson the hard way lots of times in history. And you know, that seems to be the natural progression. You know, you get elevated from, you know, to the NFL as a position coach, work your way up the chain, maybe get to that coordinator play calling position, and then you get your head coaching chance. And I understand why that's the case, but just because you're a master of X's and O's, or just because you put up, you know, 47 points on the Patriots, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the next Bill Belichick, right? So there's so much that goes into it, obviously. And, you know, there have been really kind of introverted non-leaders who have been exceptional play callers. And we figure out once they get in that leadership position, you know, they were promoted beyond their abilities, right? I mean, again, it's not everybody is cut out to be a head coach. There are some head coaches who were never great coordinators, right? I mean, John Harbaugh comes to mind, obviously Belichick too. Mike Tomlin was spent 1 year as the Vikings defensive coordinator before getting his job. I don't think anyone would question their credentials. So that's why I don't mind some of these teams looking outside the box for, you know, like a Jared Mayo or a Hines Ward. I mean, who knows if they'll get jobs, but clearly there's some kind of intangible ability that those teams see in those men and say, okay, just because they're not the latest hotshot coordinator doesn't mean they can't be a head coach. You know, and with Todd Bowles, you ask yourself, what did we learn from his previous head coaching, you know, experience? What did we learn when he was there? Did he get dealt a bad hand and make the most of it? Or was he the reason that they didn't win as many games as they should have, or what have you? So I hope teams don't get too caught up in, you know, a playoff game performance. But in the case of Kellen Moore, I don't think you can separate some of the play calling, game management questions from him, all right? I mean, Mike McCarthy and Dak have taken plenty of heat this morning for the way they executed some of those plays, maybe the refs too, but I would think that the play caller also has something to do with it, and it's at least got to be a sliver of the projection of what they're going to be as potential head coaches.
Eric Edholm, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, is joining us here on Dukes and Bell. Eric, the other thing I had from this weekend, as I'm watching these games and looking at it from a Falcons vantage point as well, is, you know, Terry Fontenot and the Atlanta Falcons and Arthur Smith are going to have to find the quarterback of the future. I mean, they certainly have to figure out the trenches and the pass rush and the salary cap hell that they're in, but they're going to have to find Matt's successor. And I thought this weekend really epitomized the difference between the elite quarterbacks and the arguable franchise quarterback. Like, I'm watching Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. I'm like, stud. And then I watch Derek Carr, and then I watch Jalen Hurts, and I watch Mac Jones, and I'm like, okay, franchise quarterbacks perhaps, high-end franchise quarterback for Derek Carr. But this weekend proved to me there's a big difference between the elite 5 to 6 quarterbacks and then guys like 7 on down to 15.
Right, and you know, you could even throw in, you know, the Tennessee Titans who sat out this weekend and ask yourself, you know, where does Ryan Tannehill fit on that spectrum, right? Is he in the closer to that Carr group, or is he closer to the Burrows of the world, what have you? You know, and that may be the difference in whether they succeed or not, whether they meet expectations as the number one seed. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds super obvious to say that such a thing, right? You have a better quarterback, you have a better chance to win. But then even to take it a step further, I mean, the loser of the 49ers, I guess both teams, 49ers and Packers, both have contingency plans that are already in place too, right? Jordan Love is backing up Aaron Rodgers. We don't know when Rodgers' tenure in Green Bay is going to end. We don't know if he stays for another 2-3 years. Things are great now and everything ends in la-la land, or, you know, Love's traded, what have you, or are they ready to turn to the kids? Same with Trey Lance in San Francisco if Jimmy is, you know, dealt this offseason or what have you. So, you know, if you can get that kind of situation, that's obviously nirvana, right? And it rarely works out perfectly where, you know, your young guy is developed at the perfect time and you can let the veteran go. I understand the situation that the Falcons are in. You don't want to be in a situation like the Steelers are in, for instance, where Roethlisberger, we assume this is his last game last night. You know, they can talk up Dwayne Haskins. Maybe he's the answer. We've seen Mason Rudolph before. They probably need to go get one other quarterback, be it a rookie or a free agent, a veteran of some sort, to make people feel like there's, you know, some upward movement there, that they can actually improve over the quarterback play that they received this year. So it's never clean. It's never perfect. It's never easy. But that's obviously what the vast majority of teams try to do. Look at the Patriots. During Brady's tenure, I think they drafted like 10 quarterbacks. And, you know, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury was one of them, right? I mean, he ended up a coach, and Kevin O'Connell is one of them. He's on the Rams staff. And, you know, you look at, you know, Garoppolo, obviously, and, you know, some of these guys clearly had some ability to either coach or play, had the quarterback coach brain of some sort. So, you know, they were doing something right, even though they had ostensibly the best quarterback in the game at the time. They knew they had to keep kind of drafting a potential successor every 2 years or so. And I think that's, you know, I look at the Falcons, right? They barely draft quarterbacks. So I think Sean Renfrey was the last one they drafted, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, it's been a minute since they've had a young guy waiting in the pen.
Eric, one more here, and then we'll go ahead and let you go. Did this weekend change your – I'm not sure what your Super Bowl picks are, but this weekend change at all who you feel will be in the NFC and AFC championship games, or are you kind of still stuck on a couple of teams based on what you saw this weekend?
Well, I was reminded a few days ago by a Twitter follower that I buttered the bread on both sides. I apparently picked Bills 49ers back in August, but then somewhere else I also picked – Bills Packers. So I thought maybe I could get away with it. Apparently, I don't know. But so depending on which one you want to go with, I felt a lot better about my Bills pick, obviously, because, you know, when they – let's go back to halftime of the game in Tampa. They had just lost to New England in that 14-10 game, you know, had the ball rammed down their throat 55 times or whatever it was. Patriots throw three passes, still win up in Orchard Park. I mean, that, you know, that hurt. And then the first half against Brady and the Bucs, they were down, I think, 27-3. Everything since then has been trending upward. The competition, not great, but they did play New England once in there prior to the playoff game. And then to go out and do a Belichick defense, what I don't think anyone's ever done before in the playoffs, certainly not even in the regular season, you could probably argue to. I mean, that's an all-time historic performance. Will they back it up? You know, can they go out and beat the Chiefs? I think they can. They've already done it once this year. You know, they've faced this team a number of times in the last couple of years. They know what to expect. They know what kind of environment they're getting into. So, you know, I think the Bills' Super Bowl chances certainly didn't take a dip downward after that. So I feel a little bit better about that half of the equation. The other half, you know, we'll find out. One of those Super Bowl teams I picked is going to win. One's going home.
Josh Allen, man, that five touchdown performance, like you said, was incredible to watch him do it against that Belichick defense. Eric, we're out of time. I appreciate you jumping on here, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy divisional round weekend next weekend.
All right, guys. See you. Take it easy.
Thanks,
Ian. Eric Edholm, at Eric_Edholm on Twitter, Yahoo Sports, NFL, NFL Draft as well, which is where all of our Falcon focus turns to, right? It's offseason. It's free agency. It's NFL Draft. It's what the Falcons are going to do with the current picks and, you know, lack thereof in terms of free agent money to spend on potential free agents. It's always fun to talk to Eric here on Dukes and Bell. Take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to expound on, during our NFL Blitz, the head coaching carousel that is about to take flight. I mean, we are about to have, in my opinion, our first couple of hires. It's going to domino down through the rest of the, 7-8 openings in the National Football League. We'll discuss the best places to go, the best candidates for these head coaching spots, and how it impacts the Falcons as well next in our NFL Blitzes. Thomas and Nick, in for Carl and Mike on Dukes and Bell Sports Radio. Manager of the Game, managerofthegame.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.